Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Nunes' hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Over and over. Amanda Nunes.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another. But I'm going to get the job done.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network here in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. My name is Pedro Fernandez, in case you didn't know. Straight up, this is my show. I've been doing this for 38 plus years now. And welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on WBC-TV. Often imitated but never duplicated. Check it out. We're going to talk on boxing for the next 2 hours. Of course, we'll mix in a little MMA, but we'll spend some time with the retired HBO godfather in this hour. I'm talking about Mr. Larry Merchant. We'll talk about the junior welterweight division. Of course, last night's pay-per-view. Remember the pay-per-view I told you where the promoters were going to pay you to watch it? Well, they almost did, because the price started out at $69.95. Then I saw it for $39.95. Then somebody got it for $19.95. Then somebody last night got it for $9.95. So it was like cannabis prices in San Francisco. All over the place. That's all over the place. Anyway, bottom line is, if you watch a card, of course, Luis Ortiz, former Cuban exile, 2 weeks short of 43 years old, got off the deck twice to beat Charles Martin, a former IBF title holder. Good fight, up and down, knockdown action, if you like that type of stuff. Of course, a big heavyweight card, but I don't think it was worthy of paying $69 for it. Would I have paid $10 for it? Yes. Would I pay $19 for it? Maybe. But I would not have paid $69.95. That's what they wanted, straight up. So, you know, I'm going to say another pay-per-view event I watched, but I didn't pay for it in full because I went over to a friend of mine's house and watched it there. That's the way to do it. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. That number, 415-275-1613. The text line here in the studio, once again, 415-275-1613. We're live on Twitch.tv, of course, the Sports Byline USA channel, Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite, and about 1,000 other different internet platforms. This is Ring Talk.
Everyone says, I wish I was in your shoe, I wish I was in your shoe. The people, the hundreds of people that wish they were in my shoe, don't know the tenth of it. If they were in my shoe, they would cry like babies.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You want to take a chance on that?
Listening to Mike Tyson there, I can't forget the fact that he used to heat up the gyms in Las Vegas. Whether he worked at the Golden Glove Gym or at Johnny Taco's, he used to have people come in, like the Johnny Taco ran the gym, and you have to come in like at 7 o'clock in the morning and turn on the heat. Mike wanted it like 100 degrees in there, I kid you not. Anyway, he's talking about doing another exhibition, and why not? I think he did look good against Roy Jones. Of course, he doesn't want to end up like Evander Holyfield or Oscar De La Hoya. And why do I say Oscar De La Hoya? Because Oscar would end up like Evander Holyfield. Had he fought Vitor Belfort, and of course he backed out the last minute, said he had COVID, he was in the hospital, giving interviews with COVID in the hospital. Let's go, good old Oscar De La Hoya, of course, Oscar De La Fishnets. Now, straight up, the heavyweight division is what it is. Of course, the champion is Tyson Fury, undefeated lad. Of course, that one draw against Deontay Wilder was a race with two stoppage wins. Of course, the very dominant in his performances against Wilder, without a doubt. And if Wilder's the best American heavyweight we have, we've got some problems here. But Oleg Usyk, of course, he came along. He's this undefeated cruiserweight from the Ukraine, and he was considered a smallish heavyweight, but he came along and he gangster slapped 2012 Olympic gold medalist. I'm talking about Anthony Joshua. Of course, Joshua coming in with that one loss against Andy Ruiz. I'm talking about Andy Ruiz. I mean, he lost to a big fat guy and then won against a big fat, even fatter guy. And then he came back and lost against a guy that was smaller than him. He's just not the real deal. In other words, you know, some guys come into boxing late and, you know, they look good, but you can't, they're not. I'll put it to you like this. If he was a violin player and we gave him the violin at the age of 18 or 17 and asked him to be a master by the age of 30, he probably wouldn't be. Same thing applies to boxing. If you start late, you're probably not going to fulfill the get to the heights that you probably want to get. Anyway, straight up, Tyson Fury, of course, going back and forth with Dillian White as far as arguments are concerned, as far as purse bids are concerned. The WBC has ruled that an 80-20 split will go down as far as the purse bid is concerned. In other words, if a purse bid went out at $1 million, Tyson Fury would get $800,000 and Dillian White would get $200,000. And somebody said to me, well, Dillian White should be happy to get 20% of the purse because 20% of any Tyson Fury purse is going to be worth a whole lot of money. And where can he make that money anywhere else? He can't. Even if he fights for a vacant belt or does something else, decides to go away from the WBC, he's not going to make more money than he will here. I'm talking about Dillian White. Not my favorite fighter, of course, a guy that supposedly, allegedly did some Flintstone vitamins in his time, but I can't prove that, so I won't mention. Anyway, Oleg Usyk, undefeated at the top of the ladder. I mean, him and Tyson Fury is 19 and zip. Tyson Fury is 31 and zip with that one draw. Of course, Joshua coming in with two losses, 24-2 now. Deontay Wilder, 42-2, but with the one draw. But let's be honest, 40 of the guys that Deontay Wilder fought, what did Mark Breland say, his former trainer? I could beat them. That's why Mark, the former 1984 Olympic gold medalist at 147, maybe the best amateur ever. But yeah, he admitted, you know, some of the guys when he was training Wilder, some of the guys that Wilder was fighting, he could beat. I mean, Wilder was just fighting a whole lot of stiffs. There was absolutely no doubt about it, of course. And then, of course, when he got tested, he didn't pass. I mean, Tyson Fury is not the greatest thing in the entire world, but he's the greatest thing right now as far as the heavyweights are concerned. I mean, nobody could beat his big ass, and that's all there is to it. He's size, he's awkward, he's mobile, he can punch a little bit, he can box a little bit, he takes a good shot, he's got off the deck before. I mean, you know, he's sort of like the complete fighter, but he's not complete as far as his physical aspect of him. He looks fat, he looks out of shape. I think Jim Lampley, a former voice of HBO boxing, said he looks like a fat slob, but I wouldn't go that far. Anyway, let's talk about last night's fight. Of course, the Cuban exile. I'm talking about Luis Ortiz. Of course, the twice beaten heavyweight. What's he? 38-2 or 33-2 now? 28 KOs. Charles Martin. Martin came in with a 3-fight winning streak, but it wasn't going to happen as far as the fourth was concerned because of the fact he was fighting a guy that was probably a little bit better than him. But he was coming off kind of three wins in a row. But then you look at Ortiz and he's 43 years old in a couple of weeks, man. These guys, you shouldn't be losing to 43-year-old guys. You just shouldn't, okay? You absolutely shouldn't. I don't care if George Foreman did defy everybody and come back and win the heavyweight title by suckering Michael Moore into that one shot and getting knocked out, that kind of good stuff. And what is Michael Moore famous for? Putting a bomb on a fence at the Kronk Gym, at the Kronk House in Detroit, Michigan. Emmanuel Stewart had a house. Now, Michael Moore was such a nut. I told you before, the former light heavyweight and heavyweight champion of the world, of course, out of Manassas, Pennsylvania, something like that. Anyway, when he was living with Emmanuel Stewart in Detroit, Michigan, he built a bomb. He was a bomb builder. This guy was nuts, okay? But he built a bomb. He put it on the desk outside of Emmanuel's house, and he blew the gate up. I kid you not, Michael Moore was a bit of a nut. Anyway, Michael Moore, of course, getting knocked out by George Foreman. That's what he's famous for, getting knocked out by an old man. But George Foreman, they only come along once in a while, and that was a good move by George. I mean, the plan to sucker Michael Moore in like that, let Michael throw his shots, let Michael get comfortable. That's what happened. Mike just got a little too comfortable there. He said, well, I'm kicking this old man's ass. This old man's got nothing. The old man was just waiting on him, to time that right. And boom, he timed it, and it was all over. Michael Moore no longer the heavyweight champion. Of course, George Foreman comes back, becomes the oldest heavyweight champion in history. Now we've got guys, you know, I mean, they're not real old. I mean, Tyson Fury's 33. Oleg Usyk is 34. Wilder is 36. Dillian White is 34. Joseph Parker, I don't even consider him part of the mix because he beat Derek Chisora a fortnight ago. I don't think so. Michael Hunter, not just yet. Anyway, Luis Ortiz is next on the list as far as the top 10 at BoxRec.com is concerned. Of course, Ortiz, a winner last night. He got off the deck twice and he stopped Charles Martin in the sixth round, but I'm not all that impressed. Anyway, Joe Joyce is next on the list. I'm not too impressed with him. Of course, he's a young man that comes to us from the UK. Andy Ruiz, or Auntie Louise, he's in real good physical shape. The fat man, the former fat man, he'll never look like me. He'll never be trim, pretty like me. He just won't. That's not in his makeup, okay? It's not in his DNA, okay? But he's in shape. I watched some films of him last night, and I was saying to myself, man, I was pretty impressed. Reynoso and crew, Eddie Reynoso and his crew, are putting him through some workouts. He looks trim. I'm not saying he'll ever be, trim, but he won't be the fat guy he used to be. I mean, he was a fat pig, and there's no other way to put it. He should have been arrested for impersonating a professional boxer when he stepped into that ring. Where was that? In the United Arab Emirates or down there in Saudi Arabia or something like that when he fought Anthony Joshua the second time, he should have been arrested. There's no way in the world any other fighter in any other weight class could have pulled that crap off. I was going to say spit with an H, but I caught myself. Okay, think about this. The guy comes in and he goes to camp at 317 pounds. He comes in at 283. He's fatter than duck with an F. He just is. I mean, he's absolutely a pig. But now he's with Reynoso and them. Of course, Reynoso famous for putting the Canelo team together. And they are Team Canelo. And, of course, Team Canelo is pound for pound the best fighter in the world. But back to Andy Ruiz. He's looking good. He has no fight for 2022 yet. But he's looking pretty good for a fat man. So I want to give him some props. As far as the rest of the heavyweight division is concerned, Frank Sanchez was the winner last night. But not, a, you know, well, am I supposed to be impressed? I don't think so. I think he went to 13-0 now. But 21-0 now. But I'm not too impressed with him at all. 20-0. But I'm not impressed with him. Huey Fury is also in the top 15 as far as heavyweights are concerned, but Huey Fury is not really a heavyweight threat. As far as the rest of the entire division is concerned, I don't see anybody, especially as far as an American is concerned, that's a threat to the heavyweight championship. And that's a bit frightening because, you know, American fighters, they used to dominate the heavyweight division. They used to be, I mean, you know, on occasion, somebody from the British Empire would win the title, and for the most part, it was an American property. It just was, okay? And really not anymore. The Klitschko sort of broke that long time run. They just did. I mean, they held it for a long time, and they don't appear to be giving it up. But now Europe's got the title. I mean, let's think about this. Tyson Fury, he's from Europe. Anthony Joshua, he was from Europe. Okay, he's from Europe. So is Mr. Oleg Usyk fights out of Europe, and he's coming to us from Ukraine. So nobody's American anymore. And if I look for these top 10 heavyweights, I don't see anybody outside of maybe Deontay Wilder. And Deontay Wilder, the only reason why he's a threat is he can crack with the right hand. I mean, he couldn't reach an orgasm with the left-handed, if you know what I mean. You men know what I mean? He couldn't reach an orgasm with the left hand, but he could do all kinds of stuff with the right hand. But a one-armed bandit doesn't make it, because eventually you will get exposed as being a one-armed bandit. That's what happened to him. I mean, look at it. He was mowing guys down left and right, not having too many problems. I mean, he beat up on Luis Ortiz, I think, once or twice. But at the end of the day, you know, Wilder was like the American threat. Ooh, must-watch TV. That's what some people were saying. He wasn't must-watch TV for me. In other words, because I knew the opposition, he would say, Bermain Stiverne. That was his toughest challenge. I mean, Bermain Stiverne, I could beat him. Just about. I mean, that's how limited he was. I mean, he was out of shape. He was fat. He was old. He was unmotivated. And they called that a title fight. Man, Deontay Wilder should have been ashamed for that. He just should have been ashamed. Okay, he just should. But at the end of the day, we have a heavyweight division ruled by a guy that's a bit flaky. Okay, that's right. Tyson Fury, he's a bit flaky. But at the end of the day, he's a champ. Like him or not, he is a champ. No doubt about that. The rest of the divisions, of course, going through some of the results last night, talk about the junior welterweight division in detail. Of course, people say to me, what's up with the junior welterweights? We'll find out after the break. You're tuned to Ring Talk and WBC TV.
Joshua looks so tired. I think he wants out. That's it. He says that's it. Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Only so much oil in the ground. That's what the song says. Straight up, gas went to like $6 a gallon here in San Francisco. $6 a gallon for gas here in the city by the bay. I kid you not. Of course, I go across the bay to Oakland, California. I buy my gas for like $4.39. But $6 a gallon for a gallon of gas in San Francisco. God, I'm so old. I remember gas wars at 26 cents a gallon. Straight up, 26 cents a gallon. Oh, 1973, bring it back. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into the world of boxing. Of course, coming to you live on WBC TV and Veev TV. Of course, we're talking pound-for-pound boxers right now. The best, of course, is Canelo Alvarez, 57-1, a draw. Of course, the 168-pound world champion, talking about fighting somebody, Akubu, the WBC champion, at 200 pounds, not at 190. They're not going to make him come down to 190. Of course, they could beat this guy, I think, at 220 pounds. I think that's why they're picking him. Anyway, Saul Alvarez, pound for pound, the best fighter in the world, But was he fighter of the year? No. I think George Kambosos was fighter of the year. Maybe Oleg Usyk. Maybe throw Oleg Usyk in there. Maybe even Nonito Donaire. Of course, the 38-year-old Filipino phenom from Newark, California. Of course, the Filipino Flash. Call him what you want, man. 2007, he knocked out Vic Tarchinian. And like on July 7, 2007, he knocked Tarchinian out. And then 15 years later, he is the WBC 118-pound bantamweight champion. Wow, by upset. Of course, knocked out his countryman, a fellow Filipino about a week and a half ago. But Donaire, maybe fight of the year, no doubt about that. But I like George Kambosos. I like the fact that Kambosos, of course, went into Brooklyn and went into New York City and fought a guy from New York City. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez. And I don't want to hear this crap that Teofimo Lopez, what did that doctor say afterwards? He must have been fighting like he had a 300-pound weight on his chest. Man, you know, I don't want to knock doctors because I got one of the best doctors in the world. Some doctors are just full of spit when it comes to an age, and they know little or nothing about boxing. And, I mean, do you actually think if he had a 300-pound weight on his chest, he could have fought 12 rounds like that? Come on, be serious. No way. And had that big 10th round like he had? No way, no how. I'm telling you, Teofimo Lopez just lost straight up. I mean, the guy had problems making the weight. They made weight 5, 6, 7 times. Remember, they approached this fight, him and Kambosos, it was supposed to originally take place in June. And, of course, it was postponed. Anyway, I think 6 or 7 postponements. But each time, they're in camp and they're prepping. And when you're in camp and you're coming down in weight like Teofimo Lopez comes down to like from 165 or 170 to make 135 pounds. Well, guess what? You're not making anymore. Not with ease. Anyway, he didn't have a dietitian, according to what I've been told. He did not have a dietitian. His father was in control. Yeah, Teofimo Lopez Sr., idiot of the year. And not in the world of boxing, in the world of fathers. I mean, come on, man. The guy's dancing outside the ring while his kid's getting lit up inside of it. What is he doing? And the kid comes back. Teofimo comes back and, you know, he's confused. I mean, because he hasn't had his ass kicked. He's getting his ass kicked. This is something all new to him. It's queer to Teofimo Lopez. He has no idea what's going on. I'm getting beat. I'm undefeated. I'm the guy. I'm a 13-1 favorite. Nothing's right here. And then dad comes back and tells him, hey, you won that round 2. T-O-O, okay? And that's also, you won the round also. Well, guess what? He hadn't won 2 rounds in a row, let alone that last round. So the father was giving him bad advice. Of course, I've always been against fathers in the corner because fathers, they have no median. Either they let it go too far, Rico Velasquez Sr. with Rico Velasquez back in 1989. He got knocked down. Check this out. He's defending the California Lightweight Championship in San Jose, California against a phenom in David Gonzalez. Gonzalez, I think, had one draw and one loss, a points loss, but he was a phenom. He could have been champion if he was dedicated. Anyway, Rico goes into this fight with a broken nose because when I went up to interview him, and I was the only guy that went climbed the stairs to the San Jose Civic Auditorium to interview this guy, he had 2 black eyes. I mean, he already had 2 black eyes coming into the fight. I'm saying to myself, man, this doesn't look good. 2 black eyes. How can you get 2 black eyes? Well, you got a broken nose, you get 2 black eyes. Anyway, so Rico's got the 2 black eyes. He goes into the fight. He gets knocked down, get this, 8 times. 8 times. Officially, I think 4 or 5. But he got knocked down 8 times. One time he sat on the ropes and was just getting clobbered, okay? And the referee, Hank Alespru, didn't do anything. So after getting knocked down like 6 or 7 times, I went to the referee before the 10th round, and I said to him, please stop the fight, because he wouldn't stop the fight, and the corner wouldn't stop the fight. I asked the corner to stop the fight. I went to the father, and I said to him, man, you got to stop this fight. Your kid's going to get killed. I didn't know he didn't understand English, but I'm telling him this in English, and he tells the kid, show me some balls. That's what he told him in Spanish, show me some balls. So the kid says, oh, I got to show you some balls. In the meantime, his brain is bleeding. He's got a brain bleed going on, an internal brain bleed, concussion and a brain bleed. Okay, so he gets off the stool, and before he gets off the stool, I go to the referee and I beg the referee. I said, Hank, please stop this fight. Please stop this fight. I sound like Bruno Mars with Cardi B. Please, Cardi, please. Anyway, bottom line is he wouldn't stop the fight. He told me, son, go sit down and let me do my job. He took a towel, he wiped his forehead the sweat, and he put the towel back in the corner, okay? And he went out there, and 40 seconds later, Rico Velasquez was dead. I mean dead, as in a doornail, okay? When you watch a fighter die in front of you, it's just, It freaks you out. It gives you a different perspective on the sport. I mean, yes, accidents do happen, but this accident didn't have to happen. They brought a guy in there that had been knocked out by Romero Adames about 8 or 9 weeks earlier, about two and a half months earlier in Harlington, Texas. Rico Velasquez got knocked out in the gym and he went into convulsions and some doctor was there. And I think the doctor's name was Gomez. Why does that name stick with me? Because I wrote an exclusive story on this for the San Francisco Progress newspaper back in the day. But I think it was Dr. Gomez. He got him, you know, brought him out of these convulsions and that, and they let him fight less than 3 weeks later, 3 months later. He had convulsions. You know, he had brain convulsions. He couldn't control himself, right? And they let him fight 3 months later, and then he gets killed. So it was no surprise that he died. It just wasn't. I mean, if you look at all the stuff that happened to him prior, plus he's fighting David Gonzalez, one of the meanest guys in the entire world, something bad was going to happen. Guess what? David Gonzalez also killed Robert Wangila. Robert Wangila was a 1984 Olympic gold medalist. I think he was either gold medalist in 84 or 88. Anyway, he and I had some, we rubbed shoulders one time. We were going to spar at the Top Rank gym in Las Vegas. We were talking spit back and forth. And when I say spit, I say spit with an H. Of course, I was talking in English. He was talking in broken African English, but it went back and forth. We were going to spar. And we didn't spar, but Wangila ended up getting killed by David Gonzalez too. So David Gonzalez killed Rico Velasquez in the ring in 89. He killed Wangila about 4 or 5 years later. And to top that off, David Gonzalez was from Houston, Texas. And the reason why he came to California, it was that he shot some kid in the back of the head. What do you mean? That's right. He had a gun. They were sitting in the car. They were cruising around gangbanging, right? And they're gangbanging, cruising around Houston. And he shot his friend by accident in the back of the head. The guy was in the front seat driving the car and boom, shot it, blew his head off. So anyway, they sent David, Bad News David. That's what I called him. He was Bad News David. David was just, he sort of reminded me a little bit of Roberto Duran with the sneer and this and that, okay, but he didn't have the dedication or the drive. There was just no doubt about it. There was something missing there. And of course, he was a guy like Ray Lovato in Sacramento, California, a top radio guy, a guy that should have won a world championship, but they were lazy and they wouldn't dedicate themselves. Instead of Ray fighting at 140, he fought at 147. Instead of David fighting at 135, he fought at 147. In other words, you can't win these big fights against these guys that are in their prime, the upper echelon of boxing, if you're not in tune with their weight. I can tell you from personal experience when I went to the Western Olympic Trials in 1984 and I took on Vincent Webb. I laughed at Vincent because I was eating food and he was laying in bed making weight. Okay, I'm saying to myself, man, what's this guy's laying in bed? I'm going to kick his ass. Man. No. Because when we went to the weigh-in, I realized how big this dude was. Okay, big. In other words, he was making 139, but he was like 147 pounder coming down to 139. In other words, what I'm trying to say is size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports. And that was one time where, of course, size was against me. And I realized that, of course, later when I moved up to 147 pounds, I said to myself, well, I've won three Golden Glove championships at 139 pounds. I guess I can move up to 147 because of the fact that, you know, I wanted to, how can I put this? There's a legend. There's a legend from Stockton, California, and we'll talk about this after break. Well, I wanted to live up to the legend. Couldn't do it. Of course, I'm talking about Al Aguayo. Couldn't live up to that legend. He moved to 147. He won a title at 147. He won titles at 139, 132, and 147. But I thought I would be bold and move from 139 to 147 because I was licking everybody like a stamp at 139. Then I went to 147, went down to the valley and beat up a bunch of guys to get qualified for the Nationals. I went to the Nationals and got lit up at the National Golden Gloves by, can I say, Ernie Chavez, man. He lit me up like the White House Christmas tree. Listen, if we were gay, he would have been arrested for domestic violence that day. That's how bad he beat me up. No, I'm just kidding you. Three punches. He hit me three times. I was kicking his ass in the first round until he hit me. Hit me with that right hook. That's right, southpaws. The southpaw jinx. When you're a southpaw and you think you're a bad southpaw, this and that, and you're a bad dude until you get in the ring with another southpaw. That's right. It was a southpaw that annihilated me. Ernie beat me up. There was just absolutely no doubt about it. He landed three punches. All three punches hurt. Two of them put me down. I was down twice. I got up in the second round. I said to myself, I've had enough. The referee says, do you want any more? No way, no how, baby. I'm out of here. You are tuned to Ring Talk live worldwide on WBC TV. We'll spend some time with the retired HBO Godfather talking history after the break. I'm talking about Larry Merchant on Ring Talk live worldwide on WBC TV.
I will not go 10,000 miles from here to help murder and kill another poor people simply to continue the domination of white slave masters over the darker people of the earth.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know.
Go ahead.
Like a sex machine, man.
Yeah.
Moving, doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Go ahead.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Time to bring back the pound for pound king. I'm talking to a retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. Welcome to 2022, sir.
And let me wish you have, if not a happy new year, because I don't know if we can have a happy new year, but a better new year.
Okay, I'll go along with the better new year. How is the godmama, Patricia Stitch Merchant, today?
She's scuffling, struggling. But she's up and around.
Tough dame. Okay.
And life in the big city, but we have a beautiful digs. We're looking out at a gorgeous day in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
The beach is starting to get crowded. And I'll go out for my walk in an hour or so. And that's life here. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, Larry. You know, last night they had a little pay-per-view thing, which I didn't buy, but it was on pay-per-view. Luis Ortiz and Charles Martin, I think, were in the heavyweight main event. It was a 5-heavyweight bout card. But check this out. I've never been – now, you and I have been around the block a few times as far as pay-per-views are concerned. So when this pay-per-view started out a week ago, I looked at the price. It was $69.95. When I looked at it the day before yesterday, it was $39.95. When I saw it yesterday morning, it was $19.95. And then last night, it was dropped to $9.95.
Well, it sounds like a lesson for the future. Because if everybody's trying to get in on the pay-per-view and streaming and all of that stuff, then some of them are going to find out that nobody cares about fights like that, except when they're elite, popular fighters.
Speaking of elite, popular fighters, I looked at the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier fight last night. I was watching and watched 15 rounds of it. And every time I watch a fight, I'm sorry.
Which fight? There were three of them.
I know, but when I say the fight, I mean the first one.
Okay.
But I watch all 15 rounds of that, Larry, and somehow every time I score that fight, it comes up with Ali winning that fight. How come?
You know, I've heard that a lot of people who gave the fight to Frazier, understandably, have, in watching, rewatching the fights, they say now, well, Ali could have won. Now, I've called myself an astigmatic dunce over the years because I scored the fight for Ali, and I was in the first or second row watching the fight. And Ali did a lot of damage on Joe. Joe spent more than a week in a hospital after that fight recovering. Now, I've never seen a man put as much of himself out there. The effort he did, he poured everything into that. And it was like he emptied himself to make such a great fight and on a great night. And
it was the greatest exhibition of mental strength I think I've ever seen.
Well, it was. I think that's fair to say.
In a boxing ring.
Yeah, and of course, in the third fight, he gave just as much, but he didn't have it. By that time, he had gone into some decline, but that was regarded as by many people as the best heavyweight championship fight ever. But the first one with the whole planet Earth was focused on that fight. It was so big. And two undefeated heavyweight champions.
You know, I remember like I was listening to the radio that night. Of course, what they do, they would have the round, and they would tell you what the result was after the round. And you could actually, there was the streets of San Francisco, it was not moving. It was like when the 49ers won the Super Bowl, you didn't see too many people on the street when the game was gone. It was the same with the Saleh Frazier fight. Nobody was out.
Right. Well, I was in, so I can't say what was going on out. I didn't see the third. I saw the third fight on television from Manila, but I covered the first two fights.
Wait. The third fight from Manila, was that when Marcos wouldn't let you in the country?
No. I've never been to the Philippines. I think by that time I had retired as a columnist and was moving, toward my next career.
So it was only Mobutu they didn't want you to come back, is that it?
True that.
Well, let me tell the people a story. President Mobutu was the president of Zaire. It was called Zaire then in Africa. And of course, they held the Ali Frazier fight. Don King got Mobutu to put up $6 million for the fight. Of course, it bankrupted the country. Mobutu was a crook. Needless to say, he didn't invite Larry back. Larry, what did you say about him? Well, how complimentary were you?
Well, I didn't say anything about him. But when the fight was postponed, George Foreman was cut on his eyelid in a sparring session. Mm-hmm. And it was postponed for, I don't remember, 6-8 weeks. And I went back home to New York. And when I was going back for the fight, I was told by the Zairean
consulate
cast of characters that I was not welcome and that they wouldn't let me on the flight. So
But isn't that a badge of honor with a creep like that?
Well, I was writing about the scene there in Zaire. And one column I wrote, for example, I saw these two little gray-haired ladies in a hotel, and they were yapping back and forth, and I was wondering, well, what are they doing here? Why are they here? So I went over and spoke to them. They were both librarians from Michigan, and they had gone to Zaire because the game parks there had been closed for many years, or some of the game parks. And Don King was promising people that they would have a flight. In addition to buying a ticket to the fight, they would have flights to these game preserves. Mm-hmm. And that's why those women came. But when they got there, and I saw them arguing with Don King. And when they got there, there was no such thing. It was just a hustle. And I wrote about it, and I, among other things that went on, but mostly I covered the fighters and the scene and so on, but I guess they didn't like that, and I felt it was a badge of honor. You are correct, sir.
Without a doubt. Now, George Foreman coming to Africa, you know, when he was here in San Francisco, and I told you that I watched his professional debut, essentially. I mean, he was an amateur in the gym. We watch him in the gym, win the Golden Gloves, go down there, win the Olympic gold medal, and, of course, turn pro. But as he turned pro, he was a bully. I mean, he used to beat up on guys like guys who were 40, 50 pounds lighter than him and smash these guys in his net. So, you know, when he fought Frazier, we sort of figured that Frazier was damaged goods and he was probably going to win there. But against Ali, there was no doubt in anybody's mind that Ali was going to get beat, that Ali was going to get thumped on when they went to the Rumble in the Jungle. And, I mean, after, I guess, the first or second round, I was saying to myself, he's still here. Were you surprised?
You know, Pedro, and stop me if I've told this story to you before, But I went down to Zaire on planes that Ali was on. Mm-hmm. We flew to Paris and then got on a flight to Zaire.
Okay.
And at one point, Ali got on the loudspeaker system and started to riff about the fact that he's never been on a plane with two black pilots. Will they be able to find Zaire? Will they be able to land the plane? He had the place in an uproar. And then he came out and he sat down next to me. And he said these words to me. If he doesn't get me in 7, his parachute won't open. Because Ali understood that the one flaw in that younger foreman was that he put so much out there that he didn't have great stamina.
Mm-hmm.
He fought a South American at Madison Square Garden, and he had some problems with the guy. And I guess Angelo Dundee was feeding them the information. You got to hang in there, you got to hang in there. Now, nobody had made the plan that Ali executed when the fight started of going to the ropes and trying to see if he could make George beat himself. And ultimately, that's what happened.
So that strategy was on the fly?
Yes. The Bundini Brown, his famous corner guy, was yelling, and then when he went to the corners, Dundee was telling him, get off the ropes, get off the ropes. And Ali understood that first in the middle of the ring that George at that time was quicker than they imagined. And he just decided, well, let's see what happens. And he was able to take the shots, most of them to his arms and shoulders. And then as the fourth rounds came around, he started to lash out with jabs,
mm-hmm.
and sporadic bursts, and the rest is history.
The rest is history, no doubt about that. Of course, the greatest of all time. He's got a grandson that's boxing a bit. I've had him on the show. The guy's green as guacamole, but he's trying. He's a good kid. Have you seen him at all, Nico Walsh?
No, I haven't. You know, his sons must be in their 40s at least.
At least, without a doubt. Layla Ali is 43. I think she turned 43 the day before yesterday.
Mm.
So time is flying, Godfather. I mean, I'm 64. You're 90.
I will be 91 soon if I get there.
You know what? Listen, I can't thank you enough for your time each week. Kiss the Godmama for me. Tell her I say thank you for your time, and you guys go out and have a great day.
It was a good way to start the year, Pedro.
The one, the only, the incomparable, the Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He's got a crazy gas tank, crazy gas tank.
The guitar of the late Bruce Conti died about 3 or 4 months ago in the Philippines. Bruce, may you rest in peace. You and I were cool. I remember one time I was a bouncer at this place called the Guadalajara de la Noche. It was a nightclub on 24th Street here in the city before I became a cop. It's like 1979, 1980, somewhere around there. Anyway, so I'm basically throwing drunks out of this club, and Bruce Conti comes in one night. So I introduce him to the band leader, the fact that he's Bruce Conti with Tower of Power, this thing. He was a great guy, without a doubt. Of course, he got Parkinson's and a couple other diseases. I think they could have attributed the fact he liked to do a lot of Colombian dust. So maybe that Colombian dust came back to haunt him. Speaking of Colombian dust, we're going to talk in hour number 2 about A guy whose life had some ups and downs and involved Colombian dust, because I'm getting pushed on this one. I'm talking about Alessio Arguello, of course, born in 1952, died July 1st, 2009. Did he die by his own hand? Did he commit suicide, or was he murdered? He was the mayor of Managua, Nicaragua, which is the capital of the country, biggest city in the country, no doubt about that. I mean, he was the man. I mean, everybody respected him. Not everybody, though. And somebody sent me some info this week that sort of implicated, that tried to implicate his daughter. And I met his daughter. In fact, I've got pictures of me and the girl. I guess she was about 5 years old then, so she's got to be about 25, 26 years old now, I think somewhere around there. So I'm wondering, you know, whether or not that there's any merit to this at all. But the bottom line is, somebody sent me some stuff. I'll talk about that in hour number two. I'm hoping that we'll get Mauricio Sulaiman on in hour number two as well, the WBC president. He said he would come on, but, you know, the guy's got the busiest schedule in the entire world. He's like super busy. Anyway, the bottom line is, we hope to have a few minutes with him in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Listen, if you're watching us on Vive TV, we're live on Vive TV every Tuesday. Tuesdays on Vive TV, straight up. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. When I say modest, think capitals, caps. Straight up, I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion and award-winning boxing writer. So supposedly, I know a little bit about boxing. So if you will stick around for another hour through the news, guess what? We got lots of stuff to talk about in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. But, we will not, I'm not going to go into Dana White. Somebody said to me, will you slap Dana White around again today? We loved it yesterday. I'm tired of slapping Dana White around. My hands are sore. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stick around. Hour number two after the news on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel.